Load the plates and lift the weights, and we are mates, and weights are great. And as of late, we pontificate about the weights and make a podcast.
Sumo is cheating.
This is Weekly Weights with Alex and Will.
Welcome to episode 13 of Weekly Weights. Just Will and I here today. We're going to be dissecting a program that you've written for yourself.
Yeah.
It's 10 weeks to a competition from the first week up to the competition day, including competition plan and taper and a few deloads along the way.
Yep.
We're just going to go over the rationale behind the decisions you've made in the program.
Yep. Before we begin, to those of you who are on the Weekly Weights newsletter list or on the mailing list, you should have received the program already. So just go into your inbox, find it. If it's not there, please check your junk. If you're not on the newsletter and you want me to send the program through to you, join up, and over the weekend and next Monday as well, I'll fang out another batch of emails with the program included so you can look at it as you listen.
Cool. So what we'll do is we'll start with the general layout of the program.
Yep.
So it's broken up into two distinct blocks of training.
Yep.
The first block is 6 weeks and the second block is 4 weeks.
Correct.
So the first 6 week block is of a higher volume than the second block.
Yep.
We have a wider variety of exercises and intensities overall lower.
Yeah.
So what kind of training block would you characterize this as?
Yeah.
And what is the significance of its characteristics?
So maybe first thing to do is step back quickly and sort of give a bit of context. So I've got a competition in, it's actually, I think, 12 weeks from now, but I'll start this program in 2 weeks. But I've had about 2 months with a back issue and a related hip issue that's meant I've been unable to really train my squat or deadlift. So I was able to squat up to 120 kilos-ish.
So does this mean this is the comp where you bench something big?
No, doubtful. But yeah, it's meant that I haven't actually been able to seriously train two of the lifts. So this program we're looking at today is maybe not as conventional of a competition prep. It's more aiming to bridge the gap between me, you know, only now being able to squat sort of in the 70% range, you know, and hopefully hitting PBs in the competition. So with that in mind, yeah, we have sort of two distinct blocks in the competition. I think maybe it's best if we go block by block.
Mm-hmm.
So we can talk about the first one and then jump ahead and do the second one later.
Yeah, so I've already asked you, what are the characteristics of the block? How would you define the block?
Yeah.
So basically, I just want to know how you've used the principles of strength training to design the block and what's your rationale behind.
All right. So the first block, I've written it as 6 weeks. It's, if anything, it's sort of like 2-3 week blocks. And I would call it a general strength block. I've tried to basically work backwards from meet targets across the entire prep, or like the target weights I should hit in prep across the entire prep. To the lightest starting point I could get to for my squat and deadlift, and then bench just train conventionally, and then make that sort of conform to a training layout that I would normally train with. So I would say the first 3 weeks of that 6 week block are almost like a reintroductory block for me, and then the next 3 weeks are sort of beginning more of like a true intensification block, and then the final 3 weeks and taper are a peak. The first 3 weeks of the block, I would say there's a lot of general exercises. So I've got relatively close variations of the competition lifts. I'm squatting twice a week, deadlifting twice a week, benching 3 times a week. But there's also a decent amount of work given to accessory movements. And part of the reason that I've put a lot of accessory movements in there is because as I'm reintroducing things like the competition squat and deadlift, the intensity has to actually be lower than it would normally be at this stage in a competition prep for me.
Let's go through the day-by-day layout of the first 6 weeks.
Yeah.
So on the first day, we have basically a lower body day.
Yeah.
So we've got squats, a couple top sets and some back offs, and then front squats, step ups and leg extensions.
Yeah.
The second day we have bench and upper body work. Pretty good spread of pulling to pushing. And then Wednesday we have deadlift. Is that the main deadlift day?
Yeah, main deadlift day on Wednesday.
Thursday off, Friday, pin squats and some lighter squats. and some lighter bench.
Yep.
And then Saturday, secondary deadlift day.
Secondary deadlift and more upper body work. Just yep. So it's like the top off day.
Okay. So you have top sets in from the beginning, from 10 weeks out.
Yep.
Is this to reintroduce you to heavier loads to essentially get you ending up where you want to end up?
Yeah, so...
And do you think it would be possible to run this program without top sets for your... for this case?
Okay, to answer the first question, yes, it is to start reintroducing some higher intensity work. So for context, my first week, I think I'm doing four sets of five at 180 kilos. Last competition, when I was prepping for it, I think I was doing beltless sixes up to 195. So those 4x5s for me are quite light, like quite easy. I could do beltless eights there. But in order for me to actually be touching the weights that I think I'll have to in prep, which is eventually maybe a 240 kilo squat, without having unduly big jumps, I think it's prudent for me to have some heavier rep work in there. So I've given myself two sets of three for the first 3 weeks, with a weight that, again, will be very easy for me to move. 197 the first week, jumping to 202 and then 207 across the block. So I want that to be relatively low RPE work where I'm just touching a heavier weight. And in the first 3 weeks, that's almost not for a training effect, but it does set me up to eventually be touching the heavy weights I have to in prep.
Okay, so it's kind of just preparing you for what's coming.
Yeah, and the same theme is true for deadlifts. And then for bench, I actually just think having some heavier work is valuable in general across the prep. So I've got, you know, two sets of three as a top set and then four sets of five, and my four sets of five are again at weights I'll probably cream, but my top sets are at weights that are, you know, relatively challenging for me, things that'll be sort of, you know, true RPE eights mostly in a general strength block. Yeah.
RPE eight like Liz Craven RPE eight or like actual RPE eight?
What, RPE eight where everything you do is RPE eight no matter what, is that Liz?
Yeah.
No, I think these will be close to true RPE eights. Probably easier to be honest to begin with, but you know, genuinely like difficult work and then a reasonable amount of easy work after that.
So one thing that you do in your programming that I actually don't like is that you have your main squat and deadlift day only a day apart.
Yeah.
With your lighter work coming at the end of the week.
Yeah.
Do you think there's merit to spacing them out more so that you're recovered for the heavier deadlift day?
Yes, there is, but two responses to that. One, when we get ahead to the actual final few weeks, I do have my heaviest deadlift day separated from my squat day more. In more of a general phase, to be honest, the fatigue carryover between them isn't so great for me that it matters. And with this layout, the choice is either to put my heaviest deadlift day on a Saturday, in which case I have to squat 2 days later hard, or have my heaviest deadlift day on a Wednesday. And I find that the fatigue that I have from deadlifts worsens my squat performance more than the fatigue from squats worsens my deadlift performance. So for me, it's probably the better of two options that are not optimal per se. Like if I wanted to be totally fresh for either one, then you know that'd be great. But in this instance, it's not quite possible. So it's better for me to be a tiny bit tired for deadlifts than for squats.
I think that's a good note. Is that you're never going to be 100% recovered during any hard training block.
No.
You can only be as recovered as you can be.
Yeah.
I would, in this layout, probably put the heavy deadlifts on the Friday and then the last bench day on the Saturday to give you the 2 days off the lower body training.
Right. So you would go like Friday, light squats, heavy deadlifts, no upper body, and then all upper body on Saturday.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think that could work.
Yeah, but that's
my... But this is a way. Yeah, I guess that's your preference. For me, this is a way also to let me actually bench 3 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
And so having that sort of technique bench day on the Friday, I think will be useful for me going forward.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so the first 3 weeks, I have two top sets of three and then four sets of five pretty much across the board on my main loading days. So that's Monday for squat, Tuesday for bench, and Wednesday deadlifts, I will do clustered doubles. And the reason for that, I don't think there's anything particularly magical to it, but because I'm coming back from a back injury, I find that just doing fewer reps for me just gives me a chance to make them all quality. So, you know, roughly 20 working reps with, two sets of three as top sets. Then Friday, I have a secondary squat. I like pin squats, so I'll be doing them followed by technique squats at the same weight. Again, I don't think there's anything particularly magical to this layout. But the reason I like to do my other squats after the pin squats is just from experience in a prior prep, I found that pin squats sort of helped me with positioning and in my descent. And then I'd take the pins away and actually start focusing on tempo again. I think at this point in preparation for me, I could afford to not do the secondary squats on that day. But I also think it's really useful for me to start drilling rhythm into the hole.
Mm-hmm.
And so having that lighter squat day lets me do that. On my lighter deadlift day, I'm doing paused deadlifts. And that's because something that I've noted since I've sort of come back from overseas and been training again is that my consistency in position off the floor hasn't been as good as normally. So prior to now, I might have done something like deficit deadlifts there, but I think for the moment, paused deadlifts are going to give me a little bit more benefit.
Okay. On your point on pin squats, I actually had an experience myself training. I think I did about 8 weeks of pin squats.
Yeah.
With no competition squatting throughout the entire block, throughout the entire 8 weeks.
Yeah.
And it really did take me a few weeks to get back into the groove of finding my rhythm again in the competition lift.
Yeah.
So I think it's actually a really good idea to put your squats straight after them to sort of, you've drilled your position on the pin squats and now you want to drill your position and rhythm together.
Yeah.
And I think at that light load, it's not accruing any extra fatigue. It's just for practice.
Yeah, exactly. So in like early preparatory blocks, so maybe like for 6 weeks prior to this, I would use pin squats as a secondary. So I might do like proper squat loading, you know, sets of 8 or something, and then some technique work to pins afterwards. And that would be easy work on the pins. But once you get to the point where, yeah, your pins are actually like hard, you know, so like true RPE 7 to 8s, then yeah, I do think that follow-up work to, yeah, bring rhythm back into it's useful. I think, yeah, so that's a decent run over of the first 3 weeks.
I have a question.
Yeah, please.
One more question. Your squat and deadlift loading has started very light relative to your max, but your bench loading has actually started quite intense. So you're starting at 115 for triples, which is 85%. You're starting on squat with 80%, and you're starting on deadlift with 77%. Can you explain why you've chosen these loads and why they're different for different lifts?
Okay. I'll answer that in three parts. So as a general theme, the intensity with which I think you should train the squat, bench, and deadlift is bench can tolerate the highest intensities. And so probably across the course of a prep, you'll handle the heaviest loads relative to your competition loads on bench. Squat, I think, sits in the middle. And deadlift, I think, should be trained lightest, both because it's most fatiguing and because I don't think it's as technically demanding. And there's probably less technically different between like light-ish deadlifts and heavy deadlifts, whereas when you squat and bench, the technical demands really do change a little bit when you get sort of plus 90%. So that's number one thing. Number two reason, in this instance, I've been training my bench pretty consistently ever since I sort of resumed training after my break overseas, whereas my squat and deadlift, I haven't been able to actually handle any reasonable training loads for quite a while. So for me to reintroduce those weights at, you know, plus 80%, 85% for, you know, say week one of a training block is going to be really hard. Whereas for me to do pretty sub-max work is going to be much more manageable, and it still gives me space across the course of the prep to hit, you know, the numbers that I need to, I think, to be prepared. And that brings me to the third part of the answer to your question, which is that when I plan, when I'm actually planning a competition cycle, I don't necessarily think in terms of what percentage ought I start my lifts at. I do that calculation once I've already done everything to sort of make sure it lines up. I think instead, what weights do I need to hit when? You know, at the very end of my prep. So in this instance, say I know that I need to hit about a 240 kilo squat single. And then I say, how can I work back in a stepwise fashion that's pretty sensible from that? And then if I get to, you know, in this instance, 10 weeks out and I've done those steps back and it says 197 kilos, then from there I can decide roughly how I'm going to load 197 kilos to make it appropriately challenging and still let me build momentum over the prep. Does that make sense?
Of course. I think another point is that because you haven't been training the squat and deadlift at the same capacity that you have the bench in the last few months.
Yeah.
Your max is actually a lot lower now than it would be at your peak.
Yeah, true.
So the percentage is probably more reflective on what your like current percentage is.
Yeah.
So they probably line up a bit closer when you look at it like that.
Yeah, and the reverse is also probably true with bench in that you did that calculation off 135, my last competition max, Whereas, you know, since I have benched 140, so it's, you know, it's not like, it's not remarkably different from that. But yeah, the like the maxial base and those estimations off, yeah, is probably slightly off in the opposite direction for those lifts. I should say as well that in this instance, I have actually been training lower body for the past 6 weeks. And so I'll give a quick shout out to our last guest, Luke Tulloch, who has had me basically doing bodybuilding programs. So again, my capacity is reasonably good on all of the lifts, and I don't think I've lost a huge amount of general strength. It's just I need technical practice on the lifts. So again, submax loading's good.
Mm-hmm. Let's go through the loading progressions.
Yeah.
So we start off with two triples on all of the main lifts on their main days.
Yeah.
With back offs.
Yep.
How do they progress as we go and why?
So squats just go up 5 kilos a week. On both loading schemes, so both on the top triples and the back off sets of five.
Mm-hmm.
They go up 5 kilos because it's a manageable jump and it sets me up for the weights that I need to later. Mm-hmm. I could have accelerated the jumps on those triples to have me handling a heavier weight at the end of those first 3 weeks, but again, I don't think it's important to be handling your heaviest weights 7 weeks out. I think it's important for you to be making weights look good 7 weeks out and be handling your heavier weights later. So I save those bigger jumps for when I'm doing doubles and singles and can afford it.
Save your heavy weights for competition day.
Yeah, so yeah, basically save your heavy weights for when you need to do them. Bench top weights go up by 2.5 kilos a week, because 2.5 kilos a week is relatively almost a bigger jump than it is for my squat.
Before you continue, one gripe I have with your program is that you don't write the 0.5 kilo in.
Yeah.
It really fucking shits me.
Yeah.
So 202 is actually 202.5 for those of you following along at home.
Yeah, true. I should say,
Will's lazy.
When I write stuff for my own clients, I make sure to do that. But because I'm writing this for myself, I can probably afford to think, what is my coach thinking? And I'm that guy.
But what if you load up like 207.0 one day?
No, I might do it. You remember when I did? This doesn't say much for me as a trainer. I once squatted, I was doing 222.5 kilos for two when I was squatting, but I loaded up 222.0 for two so I could say it like Richie Benno, and did it, and it was good. It was one of my better doubles. Do you remember that, Alex?
No, I don't.
Okay, it was great. Anyway, so same thing's true for bench, up 2.5 kilos a week, for the same reasons, because it's about an appropriate weight jump and it sets me up to go from what's a pretty easy weight at the start of the cycle to a pretty moderate one at the end. Deadlifts, I jump up 7 kilos week one and then 5 kilos week two. Go on. Okay, and the reason I jump up slightly more on deadlift is because I got more ground to cover and because my deadlift max is 50 kilos more than my squat max. So again, I can afford that slightly bigger jump there.
In the back off sets, you have 4 fives for squat, 4 fives for bench, and 8 doubles for deadlift. Why the doubles on deadlift?
So I already touched on that quickly, but to reiterate, deadlifts, I like doing fewer reps. I like having consistency in position, and in general, like that's been something that's been successful for me in training. In this instance, because my back's been a little bit funny, I also think it's important for me to be really, really consistent and just brace well. I find that, I could do 2 sets of 8. In fact, I could probably just do a set of 16 at any of those weights across the cycle. But for me, I've found that doing weights that are further from failure also accrues less fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
So when I do 8 doubles on deadlifts, 2 days later when I go to squat, I'm much less buggered and my erectors are much less sore than were I to do 2 eights or 4 fives or anything where I'm actually pushing, within 3 to 5 reps of failure.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why.
Are you also going to use those as an opportunity to work on your grip?
Yeah, I'll probably throw in a long hold at the end of each.
If you have 8 chances to hold the bar for a long time at the end, are you going to do that? Because I think you should.
So Alex loves to point out that my grip strength sucks, which is true.
Because he has small hands.
I do have little hobbit hands.
I can't really talk though. I missed the bottom grip.
Yeah. I mean, it stinks. It's easily the worst way to miss a deadlift.
It's the lowest. Shout out JP.
Yeah, shout out JP. brothers in arms. I'll probably throw in long holds at the end of my triples and then probably in the last set of my 8x2 because I'm going to do them clustered. I think if I were to do like a 30-second hold at the end of my 8x2, I'd literally just be doing 16 reps straight. I'll do 2 triples, probably 30-second hold at the end of them, and then 8 doubles and maybe another 30-second hold at the end of that. But yeah, like Alex said, just having a chance to set your grip multiple times also helps. So yeah, that, it's not for any magical reason. It's just for technical stability.
Okay, next question, and sort of zooming out a little bit.
Yeah.
This 6 weeks block, this 6 week block is split up again into two 3 week blocks.
Yeah.
So we've just spoken about the volume and the loading for the first 3 weeks.
Yep.
And how it progresses.
Yep.
We then have a little bit of a deload in the fourth week.
Yeah.
And where the volume drops a little bit.
Yep.
The triples go to doubles,
the fives go to threes.
Fives go to threes.
Yeah, and the accessory works drop sort of a couple of reps as well.
A little bit less volume overall.
Yeah.
What is the purpose of the deload, and then how do we progress then from the deload?
Okay, so in this instance, again, I don't think I have time for a true deload, like a week in which load doesn't progress and everything pulls back.
But also by that token, you haven't really pushed yourself very hard in those 3 weeks that you need
I'm not going to likely be that beaten up at that stage. However, in the same way that I said, I'd rather conserve momentum with my load progressions. I'd rather conserve momentum by not letting fatigue build too high, because again, by the end of my peak, I want to be feeling quite fresh and hitting weights well.
Would you say that this is more of an intro than a deload?
Yeah, it's kind of like an intro week to the next little block. But yeah, like Alex said, the rep targets drop. I also, you'll notice in my accessory progressions, I in week one aim for 3 reps in reserve, and then I say 1 to 3 reps in reserve. And so when I do that for myself and my clients, I ask for people to either progress the load or the reps so that things get harder across the weeks. In week 4, my accessories drop back to 3 reps in reserve. And in a few instances, I've also sort of strategically dropped a set. So that again just reduces the amount of fatigue in a given week, because if you push things close to failure, the same is true for whether you're doing a dumbbell bench or, you know, a competition squat. The closer to failure you get, the more fatigue you accrue relative to the volume you've done. So everything drops further from failure. I drop a couple of sets and the rep targets drop. So on the main lifts, I'll go from doing something that might have been an RPE 7 to something that's going to be like an RPE 6. Again, that should be just enough to keep me fresh. And it sets me up for weeks 5 and 6, which are the last weeks in which I'm handling a reasonable amount of volume before the final 3 week push to comp.
So if we compare week 1 to week 6,
yeah,
let's just look at the top sets and the volume.
Okay.
So week 1, we have 2 triples at 197 on squat.
Yeah.
And week 6, we have 2 doubles at 225.
Yeah.
So we've jumped 27.5 kilos.
Yeah, good maths.
Quick true maths.
And the 3 triples at 210 back offs.
The back offs have gone from 4 fives at 180 to 3 threes at 210. So yep, quite a lot less volume, but the intensity has spiked.
Yeah.
On the bench, we started with 2 triples at 115.
Yep.
And we're finishing with 3 singles at 127.5.
Yep.
We started at 4 fives at 100 and finishing with 4 triples at 115.
Yep.
And deadlift was 225 for 2 triples.
Yeah.
And finishing with 265 for 2 doubles.
Yeah.
Started with 8 doubles at 205.
205.
Yeah. Finishing with 10 singles at 250.
Yeah. So you can see that's actually a very big rate of weight progression. Rate of weight progression? Well, I sound like a Dr. Seuss novel. Yeah. Yeah, it's a big rate of weight progression on all of the lifts. For context's sake, again, last prep that I was doing, I think I hit 3 threes at 225 on squat. So again, although that's a relatively big jump, that should for me be pretty sub max. 3 singles at 127 is not that hard. Likewise, I think last time I hit my 8x2 at 250 on deadlifts, and I think my first 12 clustered singles at 265. So again, that's still relatively sub-max work for me, but I'm hoping across those 6 weeks to have progressed from week one being really, really easy to pretty close to actual like hard loading work for me. The 6 weeks sort of serve to bridge that gap. So that vaguely answers your question.
Cool, we're gonna take a quick break.
Yep.
And then we'll come back and talk about the last 4 weeks.
Weekly weights. Okay, welcome back to Weekly Weights. Will and Alex here. Today we're talking about my favorite subject, which is myself. We're covering a quick meet prep I'm doing, sort of starting from square one, to take me through to hopefully PBs in 10 weeks. And we've sort of spoken through the first 6 week block that I'd written out for myself, which is kind of a mixture of a reintroductory block and a strength block. And now we're going to cover the final 3 loading weeks and my taper leading into the meet.
So we've spoken that, you know, the 10 weeks was split up into 6 and 4.
Yeah.
The last 4 weeks is 3 weeks of loading.
Yeah.
And 1 week of taper.
Yeah.
Obviously the intensity is starting to climb.
Yeah.
And the volume is dropping off rapidly.
Yeah.
How would you define this block of training?
So this block of training is a peak. Absolutely. The volume in general has fallen across the board. There's much more difference between my light and hard days in general. The specificity is much higher, and, you know, by the same token, I've dropped a huge amount of the actual, like, general work. So my accessory work's, yeah, almost gone.
So the goal of this block is obviously to perform on competition day.
Yes.
How are you going about achieving this goal?
Okay.
So what principles are you using, and how are you manipulating the variables?
What principles? I mean, all of the principles of training. Okay, so yeah, I picked one and I said forget the rest. Okay, so I said when we were talking about the first 6 weeks that I, in my head, had sort of said what weights do I need to hit to be prepared for competition day.
So did you say I want to squat X on the day, bench X on the day, and deadlift X on the day, and then work back from that? Or did you sort of have like a rough idea of the competition?
Yeah. So I would say I had a rough idea of what my competition weights should be. We'll get to how I decided that at some stage. But I sort of said in order for me to squat about 250, bench about 140, and deadlift about 300, in preparation, I probably need to squat about 240, bench somewhere in the 135 to 137 range, and deadlift probably 280, 285 for singles.
285!
Shout out Tim Davies, episode 4?
It's cursed.
4?
7.
285.
7?
6. It's episode 285 on the...
6.
It was.
Yeah, it was 6.
Okay. There is no Weekly Weights episode 6. There's only Weekly Weights episode 285. Shout out Tim Davies.
I'm going to break the curse next week.
Yeah. So in my head, I decided that I needed to hit those loads. And then the next question basically becomes, in your peak, how far out from competition do you need to hit your heaviest weights? And this is something we actually went into a reasonable amount of detail talking about when we were doing our episode on peak planning, which was another program comparison episode where Alex wrote peaks for two lifters. So for me, I knew I wanted to hit my heaviest deadlift probably 2 weeks out. And so, I mean, when we get to the program, you'll see that. My heaviest squat, normally I would hit slightly closer to the meet than the deadlift. But in this instance, it made more sense for me to do a harder squat slightly further out again and then be handling closer to my openers, closer to the meet, and just making it move well. And then my heaviest bench, I can afford to hit pretty close to the comp. So in this instance, heaviest bench is about 10 days out, and then I'm still hitting my openers, you know, within 5-ish days of the meet, I think, as well. So, you know, having sort of plugged those numbers into the program where they should fit, I was then able to build the rest of the program around it. And it's probably going to make most sense, because this looks a bit funny on paper, to actually talk about the layout in general terms and then go through it. So day one is...
Before we do that...
Yeah.
We're training 4 days in this block versus 5 days.
Yeah.
What's the reason behind this?
Most important reason is that you need to be less tired. So training fewer days helps you recover, because when you're not at the gym, you're usually at home resting or doing something else. More rest, it allows me to spread the workout. And remember, we were talking a little bit about that sort of potential interference effect between the squat and deadlift earlier in the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
It allows you to mitigate that a little bit as well. Because, you know, by definition, if I'm training like Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, then if I were to have my heaviest deadlift on a Friday, I have 2 days off between there and, you know, the subsequent squat on a Monday, as opposed to the reverse.
Because that's the layout that I used.
Yes.
In that last, in episode 11.
Yeah.
10.
10? Guys, I don't know.
We've got so many episodes now.
I was going to say, yeah, when you're a really highly successful podcast, it becomes very difficult to remember what you spoke about when. So actually, this program, although on paper it mightn't look immediately like it does, it shares a lot of similarities with the peak that you had written or that we discussed in that last program. And it also shares a few similarities with some peaks that I did with Amir. Shout out Amir, episode 2. I think by the end of today, we might have been able to shout out every single person as well. Yeah, so it actually shares a few similarities with what I did with Amir. So something that I've found particularly helpful in the past is to squat frequently while I'm peaking. But in order for that to be a successful strategy, you need to very strategically pick which days are going to be hard. And I say hard meaning heavy, not necessarily hard meaning grindy. So pick which days are going to be hard and pick which days are going to be easy. When I did a similar layout to this with Amir, I squatted 4 days a week. And on two of those days, I would squat my opener for 1 to 2 singles. And the other 2 days, I would literally work up to my last warm up for a single and then go home. Last time I tried to do something, or not go home, like I do the rest of my work. Last time I ran something similar, I had an even greater disparity in loading between the days because I think it's helpful for me to touch above my squat opener in prep. But in order for that to work, I kept things at or below my last warm up for the duration on the days where I wasn't actually loading my squat. So day one is my hardest squat loading day. And then I have easy bench work. So in this instance, I've chosen a 3-count pause bench because I think I need to practice responding to the calls and holding my position on the chest. So again, that's, you know, shout out to Hazy for always saying that. And then sort of 5 sets of back work and a little bit of arm work just because.
Why not?
You got to. Day two.
Got to look good in the singlet when you take the t-shirt off for deadlifts.
Yeah, I'm absolutely taking the t-shirt off for deadlifts. Yeah. That's also, like, I've got to do it in solidarity with the women who can now do it as well.
Yeah, also the girl. Yeah, how good's that?
Yeah, the girls. Shirts off for everyone, I say. Day two is an easy squatting day. It's my hardest bench press loading day. So I'll be doing singles, sort of ramping singles, competition style, with doubles back offs. So the doubles are loaded at weights that I should be able to move very cleanly. The singles will progress from weights I'm moving pretty cleanly to weights that are relatively challenging. Easy deadlift day, so I'd call that a technique deadlift day. 5 doubles, starting light, 235. And then a tiny bit of lower body accessory work, which I'm going to trim back later in the peak. Day three is my sort of secondary squat loading day, so it's a bit easier than day one. It's another easy bench day, or, you know, moderate bench day, because I've got a tiny bit of upper body accessory work after that, including some accessory pressing. So I tend to think bench press benefits from having a little bit more general work in for longer, a little bit more volume in for longer, and an abrupt taper. And I'd love your thoughts on that in a second, Alex. And then finally, day four is easiest squatting day, another bench sort of competition practice day, so just some singles, and then hardest deadlift day, tiny bit of lower body accessory work, and I go home, and the lower body accessory work disappears again late in the peak. Alex, I just said what I said about bench, and I wanna know your thoughts on it. So I think bench press in general should maintain volume for the longest during the peak, mm-hmm. and should probably also maintain more variety during the peak than the squat and the deadlift. What do you think?
I think it depends on the lifter. Mm-hmm. I definitely think that we can keep things more intense and the volume higher for the bench relative to the other two lifts.
Yeah.
And I also think we can train it more frequently than the other two lifts.
Yeah.
This is mostly because of SRA. Yeah. And our ability to recover.
Define sessions. SRA for people.
So it's stimulus recovery adaptation.
Yeah.
So the time taken between doing the training session and then being able to then do another productive training session after it. So because of the muscle groups we use are smaller, the range of motion is generally smaller, we are going to recover quicker from the bench than the other two lifts. And also the load on the bar is going to be a lot lighter. So the overall fatigue is much, much less on the bench than in the other two.
Yeah.
So we can get away with doing more for longer.
Yeah.
Whether we should keep variety in is, I think, dependent on the lifter.
Yeah.
If it's someone who is relatively new and, you know, wouldn't be doing like a full-on peak like this.
Yeah.
We probably want to keep variety in because they can still improve. And we've spoken about this last time. They can still improve right up to competition day.
Yeah.
So keeping their maybe their touch and goes in or close grip or whatever the, whatever their variety is.
Yeah.
Keeping that in can just allow them to continue improving.
And when you but say when, improve, you mean like general strength capacity. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. But when we are dealing with someone who's a little bit more advanced, we really want to dial them in. So I like to go closer to the competition lift.
Yeah.
Something like what you've done with the three count.
Yeah.
Basically three count and comp bench and maybe touch and go bench.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't go like on an incline or a decline.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do pin bench, etc.
Right. So yeah,
and the reason for that is that we really want to dial in the technique and yeah. we really want to get them firing on the day. So if we confuse the motor pattern a little bit, it can get harder to groove it properly
yeah.
on the day.
So I pretty much agree with you, which is unsurprising because we usually agree. What I think can be useful, and this is true for squat and deadlift as well, but I try and be very judicious in how I do it. What I think can be true in bench is that you can use variations of the movement to train the bench in sort of like a part whole fashion, where you can do things that resemble competition bench very closely and then just use them to emphasize portions of the movement. And then if you strategically load them to be easier or harder on certain days, you can still make sure that your main competition bench loading days are progressing and you just get a little bit of extra technical emphasis on the other days. So, you know, like I was saying, three count pause bench, I think is a great way to train people to respond to the calls and stay tight on the chest. Likewise, if you were to choose a tempo descent bench or something else, I don't know, a touch and go bench or something, you can help people groove their descent, things like that. But then you just need to be judicious in saying how hard does this day actually have to be to serve that purpose, as opposed to using that day to just sort of smash your chest.
And I think the other point is that because we can get away with training the bench more frequently,
yeah,
it's maybe a good idea to throw in a little bit of variety because it's less boring.
Yeah, it's less boring. And I also think it, like, there is specific fatigue. So, like, if you do the exact same movement lots of times, because the stress, like, say, you know, bench is a pec movement, partly, or at least, you know, largely. The distribution of stress, though, on your pec fibers isn't, like, even across all of them. It's certain fibers do a lot of work, and, you know, certain motor units will be recruited first. And so those ones get worked hard and heaps. And so having slight variations in, you know, like the grip width or the angle on which you press, even if you don't like inclines or doing close grip and stuff, can just shift a bit of that training stress to other fibers, which makes them less specific, sure, but it also reduces the risk of like overuse injury and staleness. Mm-hmm. And so it's a way of still getting you broadly doing a similar pattern without you necessarily building up heaps of like physiological fatigue in those fibers too.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that is why I would use those variations more further out from competition.
Yeah. Yeah, when you're handling higher volumes as well. Yeah. So, yeah. Okay, cool. So anyway, that was...
And the other thing...
Yeah.
Similar to the freak, the same thing, but kind of in reverse.
Yeah.
Is that the programming that I use for the squat and deadlift, particularly in the peak, particularly the deadlift, is twice a week.
Yeah.
Very, very rarely I'll go over twice a week and... I think it's been a long time since I've gone over twice a week.
Yeah.
In a program, you want both of those both of those deadlift sessions to be the competition movement. So there isn't any wiggle room for variety in the last 4 weeks.
Why do you think that?
Because I think you need to really, really groove it in, and if you're only doing it once a week, it can get a little bit confusing.
Yeah. So I actually agree. I have done non-competition deadlifts in my peak very sparingly. I think the reason I agree is basically because you will be doing, or most people will be doing, the least volume on their deadlift in a peak, and so it's the one in which, like, if you don't put almost all of your volume into the competition lift, you almost like will lack sufficient practice. Whereas bench, because I think you're doing the most volume as well, it's like you're going to get sufficient comp bench practice and still have room to do a little more. Squat, you're going to have moderate volume between, like, as in compared to bench and deadlift. And so, again, you're going to have adequate competition squat practice. So, you probably have room to have a tiny bit of other work to sort of satisfy those other considerations that we spoke about.
Yeah. The other thing with squats is the way I like to program my peaks is one heavy day, one light day. And yeah. That's the same for deadlift.
Yeah.
So, the same goes what I said for deadlift. applies to the squat as well.
Yeah.
I like that heavy squat to be where the work is done. That's the overloading session.
Yeah.
And then the easier session is deliberately very, very easy.
Yeah.
Making sure you are grooving the technique. And the reason you are grooving the technique is because it's exactly the same as your main lift. Yeah. So there's a purpose for that.
Yeah. And I think that actually, that's a really good dovetail into talking actually about my program. What Alex said about the squat. So in this instance, although I am squatting 4 days a week, were I to use this type of setup with anybody else, I would never give them any more volume than they would necessarily get were I to have them squatting 2 days a week. It's just distributed a little bit differently.
Yeah.
And in this instance, it's a way to let me do lots of reps that will look good. So for instance, I'm going to talk about my day three squat. I have a top single in week one at 215, which I could hit for, I don't know, I could hit that for a 3x5. So that will look good. Week two, it's 220. Same thing, could hit it for multiple sets of three or four. And then final week is a single at 225, which will be my opener. So that's a way that I'm going to move really well. Likewise, my back offs are doubles at 200, which will be easy. 205, which will be easy. And then I don't have back offs week three. The same thing would be true if I looked at day two or at day four. All of those squat sessions are easy, and by virtue of being spread out like that and being really low reps, you know, singles, doubles, I can afford to have them maybe slightly heavier than I would program for myself if I just had a hard squat day and a technique squat day. But if you're going to do higher frequency training, then you need to be keeping lots of reps in reserve. The only day on which I expect to do squats that are challenging is my first day, where I hit a single at 232, which is like slightly above an opener, so that's hard. 240, which is about a second attempt, and then, you know, two singles at 232 in my last week, which is again, you know, just above an opener. Those will be hard singles, and then with back off singles on the first 2 weeks of there, which should be easy. But in general, I don't expect to hit a hard set of squats in this peak, other than my week eight top single at 240, which will be hard. Deadlift, on the other hand, because I'm only training it 2 days a week, I have one day that is easy, doubles at 235, 245, and then 252. And then one day which is actually hard, where I have a top single at 275, which is opener-ish, top single at 285, and then three singles at my opener about 10 days out. So that day is actually hard. That will be tiring. But I can afford that because the deadlift work is distributed. So I think there needs to be some consideration given whenever you plan a peak to how hard your days are relative to how distributed the work is. And even where you are going to have hard days that are sort of like concentrated, you still need to sort of consider that you want your reps to look good, because when you go to competition, you don't want to have practiced like, you know, 12 total reps over 90% that all looked very different.
Mm-hmm.
So Alex is nodding his head. Anyway, let's talk over the structure in more depth of this so that when you're looking at it yourself, it makes some sense. I've told you what each of the days comprises. In fact, I've more or less told you what the program looks like. In terms of when my heaviest days are located, it now probably makes more sense now that you understand the program. Heaviest deadlift is about 16 days out, with then three singles at my opener about 10 days out. Again, that's something that's probably common for many people, and it's something that I've found with a reasonable amount of experience is that I don't need to handle very heavy deadlifts very close to competition, but I can maintain intensity until close-ish, and I usually feel great about 10 days after my last heavy deadlift to pull hard again. Alex?
One thing that you have in the past done is not perform well in deadlifts as to what you're capable of in training.
Yeah.
So your competition deadlift has suffered based on doing squat and bench before it. Is that why you have deadlift last on day four? Because you're learning to practice doing deadlift after already accruing a little bit of fatigue right before it.
Actually, I'm really glad you brought that up, because when I spoke about the benefits of this setup that I found with Amir, that was one of the big ones. Yeah, practicing deadlifting for me after I've squatted and benched really helps. And it is, I think it's partly for the reason that you said, is that doing squat, particularly squat, because I do squat kind of quite bent over and use my hips and back quite a lot because my quads aren't that strong. Alex is smirking at me. So partly it's from that fatigue, and partly that's one of the big benefits of this. And I think having that sort of level of specificity can be very helpful, you know, past a certain point in your development. Another reason, that's what I was going to say, has just completely slipped my mind, but I had something profound. Oh, not that profound. But it ties back to what I was saying just before. Another reason I think that I have underperformed at deadlifts, and I say underperformed in like, you know, in inverted commas, because I haven't done terribly. It's not like I've pulled 270 in training and then pulled 260 at comp and missed 272 or something. It's been like I've looked good for 285 to 90 and then pulled 277 a few times, or, you know, looked good for 300 and pulled 290. But part of the reason I think as well is probably just carrying a little bit of excess fatigue, because in the past I've probably done, you know, doubles at my opener 8 days out, where like, you know, I can get through that and I can handle heaps of deadlift volume normally. So like, you know, it doesn't bury me, but I don't think the trade-off in terms of fatigue versus my actual capacity to deadlift heavy on the day is as good as it would be for me just smoking my opener and sort of maintaining capacity that I already have. And one luxury I have across this entire peak, again, which we'll cover when we get to the attempt plans, is that the numbers that I've put in as sort of PBs that I want to hit at the competition aren't numbers that are necessarily pie in the sky. They're numbers that when I competed at the end of last year at the Strength Fortress, other than bench, which is 5 kilos more, but they're numbers that I probably was capable of hitting then in terms of latent potential, but wasn't able to pull together on the day. So for me, it's as much a matter of actually being prepared to do well on the day as it is actually trying to get any better, if that makes sense. Anyway, I've spoken about where my heaviest deadlifts are located and where my last opener is. My heaviest squat is on the Monday of week 8, but then I still touch relatively heavy squats after that. So I've got Monday of week 8, I've got a second attempt. Monday of week 9, so that's at that stage, that's what, 2 weeks out-ish. I've got a couple of singles just above my opener. Then I hit my opener about 10 days out, so day 3. And then I'll hit my opener for one single again, I think, during my taper on the Monday. And then bench, I actually will bench quite heavy. I'll get singles ramping up to at or above my second attempt on day 2 of week 9, so like 10-ish days out. And then I'll be doing 3 singles at my opener on day 4 of that same week. And then I'll hit my opener again during the taper for a few singles. Again, just because I think bench can deal with a more abrupt taper and I can train it heavier. And again, although I'm hitting at or above a second attempt, because my third attempt that I want to do at comp is something that I've done multiple times in training now, I think that's still like maybe more conservative than it looks on paper. All this is subject to change, though. If I'm, you know, if I was squatting like crap, I'd knock the numbers down. If I was benching like crap, I'd knock the numbers down. And if I was absolutely killing it, I might take my meat plan up a little bit.
Unlikely.
Yeah, well, in the case of bench, unlikely. In fact, in the case of any of the lifts, unlikely, to be honest. I'd be very happy to go in and go 9 for 9 and feel good about myself, because I've never done either. Yeah.
So you have kind of like a stepwise approach to the taper, which you just explained.
Yeah.
In that you have your heaviest squat. What is that? That is
heaviest.
That's 2.5 weeks out. That's nearly 3 weeks out.
Yeah, true.
Nearly, yeah. So 20 days out is the heaviest squat. And then the week after is a little bit lighter. And then the week after, which we haven't got to yet, is a little bit lighter again.
Yeah.
Do you think this is a way of just slowly ridding fatigue?
Yeah.
And do you feel like in the past you've used more aggressive peak and then a quick drop off, and that hasn't been enough time for you?
Squat specifically?
Yeah.
Yeah, squat specifically. Yes and no. I think I had my heaviest squat at about that same place last competition prep. I think it was on that same Monday at that same slot. And I felt pretty good leading into the last week of my program. But then I made my subsequent squats no heavier than my opener. And so if anything, I think I sort of abruptly dropped from second attempt to just touching my opener to try and make things move smoothly. And I don't think that did enough to preserve that feel for heavyweights. So for me, I think doing slightly above my opener, slightly closer is good. But I also, and I think I do need to hit close to a second attempt squat in preparation for a competition. So the question then becomes like, how close to competition can I afford to do that? I think were I to do it much closer than where I've put it, it would make me more fatigued than I should be. So again, it's kind of like a minimizing the drawbacks of hitting a weight that heavy scenario to choose to put it there.
The way I think about it is, if I take my last competition, for instance,
yeah,
I missed my third squat. It was close. I missed my third deadlift. It was fucking close. It was like a 15-second grinder.
Yeah.
I didn't quite lock it out.
Yeah.
And it took me about 2.5 weeks to not be cooked.
Yeah.
So for me, like, 2 weeks is about where I'd put my last deadlift. And then 11 days, 12 days is about where I'd put my last squat.
Yeah.
So for you, it's a little bit less than that.
Yeah, it would be a little bit less. I tend to handle more volume and recover quicker than Alex. It's a little bit less than that. And again, another consideration here is that I expect my single at 240 on squat to be harder than my single at 285 on deadlift, because like 285, unless my hands open up, is a weight that I can cream.
It's a magic number.
It is the magic number.
One second.
Sorry.
Who's that?
Cleaner.
Someone just knocked on the door.
Yeah. Wanted to get featured on Weekly Weights, but we have a very exclusive list of people we allow on the show. If you want to be on the show, please DM me on Instagram.
We'll probably not let you on.
Oh, it depends who it is. Yeah, so that's why, again, is that squat will be relatively harder, so it needs to be relatively further out. And then after that, it's just chances to cream squats.
Okay, cool. So we've spoken a lot about the three intensity ramping weeks.
Yeah.
Before the easy week of the competition.
Yeah.
Explain the easy competition week, but don't go into the competition plan just yet.
Okay, so my taper is very similar to the type of taper that Alex would have done in our picking program comparison episode. On Monday, I'll hit my squat opener for one single. Last competition, I actually hit my last warm-up for one single, and I felt I didn't really have a great groove on the day. And I'm not entirely sure whether it was because I spent the whole morning coaching and running around, or whether it's because I hadn't hit my opener close enough. So I've sort of penciled in hit my opener for one, which will be 225-ish kilos. If I were feeling pretty cooked, I'd take a last warm-up. If I was feeling really fresh, I wouldn't go heavier than the opener. I've then got three singles at my bench opener, 127, and then three singles on my deadlift, and I put in 200 kilos. It's like arbitrary placeholder number, just three really easy singles, and that's my last deadlifting. On the Wednesday, I'll do one single at, you know, lighter than my last warm-up. So again, I put in 200. So it'd be like last or second last warm-up or even lighter again. I honestly don't see any benefit in touching heavier than that between Wednesday and the comp. Bench, one single at my opener on the Wednesday. Two sets of 6 to 10 on seated row. Then Thursday, I wrote three singles at 170, which is like my third squat warm-up, and three singles at 110, which is like my second last-ish bench warm-up. Three singles on each of them. And that Thursday day, again, like I said on the Monday, if I was tired, I'd drop the squat. On the Thursday, if I was tired, I might squat even less, like 120 or 150 just to move. And likewise, bench, if I was tired, I'd bench even less, because between Thursday and Sunday, you're not going to get any stronger, but it's a great time to get a little bit fresher. So that's just an opportunity for me to come in and move. And then I've got my 10 plans written there. Questions?
No question, but more of just a lesson for everyone listening.
Yeah.
Will has developed this program based on numerous, numerous competitions he's done.
12, 13 now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of competitions that he's done. Things have gone well, things have gone badly, and this is what he thinks is his best chance at peaking well for the competition, given the circumstances that he's under at the moment. So it's very important to know that for the lifter specifically, things are going to change from person to person.
Yeah.
Which is why it's very, very important to communicate with your coach all the time. Tell him how you feel. If, you know, you feel like you could have done more one day and you didn't really get enough, like what we were saying before, then tell them. If you feel like you're doing too much, which is like me, because I get cooked hella easy.
Yeah, it does.
Tell them.
Yeah.
It's only going to help them develop a plan for you that is going to be specific to you and help you get the best performance out of your competition.
Yeah.
This is about you specifically, not about fitting a mold, because there are molds, but everyone is slightly different.
Yeah, and to sort of extend that point, what happens or what should happen over the course of your training career is you make educated guesses about what might yield you a better result. And so part of the art is saying, like, what is something that was good enough or effective enough to conserve and what is a problem that you faced and a potential solution to it. So a really good example is the thing I said about my Monday squat during my taper, where I've decided, like, previously I would have hit my opener for singles or doubles on that day. Way back in the day, I'd hit like a 2x2 or a 3x1 at my opener, and I felt like that was too hard because honestly, like, I'd rather just be fresh on the competition day and I don't need to do more than touch the weight. So last comp, I tried going as light as a last warm-up, and it was, I think, too light.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking to trial the middle ground.
Yeah, you've been able to say what was too much, one wasn't enough.
Yeah.
And because of that, this is trialing something else.
Yeah, and there's a chance that I'll be like, oh, actually, that wasn't so great. But, you know, I won't know until I try it. And my best guess is that that's probably going to be about right.
Yeah.
So while I've made that decision in planning, it might also be, like I said, that I arrive on that Monday and go, you know what, I feel crap. And in this instance, because I'm my own coach, I have to objectively say, well, you know, what have I done in this plan to be prepared for the comp? The last time I touched my opener is going to have been 10 days out. That's close enough. So I could take my last warm-up and probably be fine. But you make your best guess decisions on a planning basis, and then with an eye on the goal, which is actually squatting well on Sunday, not on the Monday of my taper, you make adjustments on the way through. And the whole way through that peak, there may be times when I say, you know what, like, in order to be set up for my important loading days, you know, day one squats, day four deadlifts, day two bench, I'm going to have to make some nip and tuck here and there. And you make those changes with an eye on that direction so that you perform well on the day. And that's part of why having a coach is helpful as well, is because they can do that objectively. So in this instance, I'm probably going to have the luxury of messaging Alex and saying, feel crap today, need to be good for Wednesday, what do you reckon I do? And he'll probably say, you know, suck it, you should have hired me or something. But you know, having a coach, having a support network, and having an objective eye for where you want to actually be your best is really important at this stage in prep.
Mm-hmm.
Alex.
Yeah, so essentially to conclude on that, the more data that we can collect over the years, the better that we can create something that is going to be tailored to the individual.
Yep.
At the end. So the longer you stay with a coach, the better they are going to get at tailoring to you specifically.
Yep.
Like, they might screw up the first time that you compete, they might completely screw up your peak.
Yeah.
And they'll learn from it. And then the second time it might be a little bit better. And then it might be a little bit better. And then eventually they'll figure it out. Okay, let's go on to the competition plan.
Yeah.
So 10 weeks out, you have a quite vague competition plan, which I think is good.
Yeah.
But because I'll be coaching you on the day, you can throw it out the window because I'll do what I like.
Yeah, sure. I might ask Jules, actually. Just get someone I like. Yeah, go.
How is it that you can come up with a plan 10 weeks out, and how do you think that differs for someone of your experience versus someone who's newer to powerlifting?
So, like I've already said, the numbers that I am intending to hit at this meet are numbers that I think previously I've had the capacity to hit. So I probably have the luxury of saying, like, I can reasonably assume I'll be that good at my best in 10 weeks. If I were to not be certain where I was going to be in 10 weeks' time, I would still probably try and pick weights that I'm preparing for, because I think having weights that you're preparing to hit at competition allows you to make good decisions when you're picking your loading on the way through. And the whole way through talking about this program, a theme that I've sort of touched on is that you want to be prepared for the competition day and you want to conserve momentum in load progression. So even were to answer the part about how would this differ for somebody who's less experienced, even were I coaching somebody less experienced than myself, or imaginary myself with, you know, fewer years of lifting experience, I would still probably pencil in goal numbers, erring on the conservative side, and then plan backwards from there, because you can always move a little bit ahead of that schedule. But having that schedule there allows you to sort of say, okay, eyes on the prize, how light can I afford to start? What numbers should I hit? So that was that. How can I choose those numbers? So yeah, for myself, these are numbers that previously I'd say I would have been able to hit. So I could sort of chalk them in and say, roughly what do I have to do to be prepared for this? As opposed to sort of saying, I'm going to see how far I can get in 10 weeks and then pencil them in later.
I think an important note on that is the progress of someone who's new versus the progress of someone who's experienced is a lot less predictable. Where they're going to end up on the day.
You're saying the experienced person is less predictable?
More predictable.
Oh, as in their performance on the day will be more predictable?
Yeah, from 10 weeks out.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think when you're a good lifter, you know, or in my instance at least, just like an experienced lifter, you can say, yeah, in 10 weeks I can expect to be here or there. Whereas sometimes, like, when you're training people who just aren't great, in 10 weeks they'll just progress leaps and bounds, and it's like, you know, you really have to ramp things up. Yeah.
A good example of that is the guy I coached on the weekend, Aiden.
Aiden Potts?
Prosser.
Oh, Prosser, sorry, yeah.
All of his thirds were, like, super easy.
Yeah, he probably could have pulled like 15 more kilos on his third deadlift.
But we didn't know.
Yeah, but you don't know. But at the same time, they were all PBs, right?
Yep.
And so that sort of brings me back to my point, which is that I think it's beneficial to, as far out as is prudent, have penciled in numbers that you want to hit at the meet and work backwards from them, and then just give yourself room to accelerate ahead of that if you have to during your program. But again, it's better to hit all your lifts and feel good about it than miss all your lifts because you set numbers that were pie in the sky. And it's also better to have that foundation to plan off of than to say, I'm going to see how far ahead I can get, because saying, like, I'm going to see how far I can progress over 10 weeks is a really good way to set yourself up to push too hard too early and then stall earlier than you otherwise would.
Yeah, it's putting a finishing line on something that doesn't need to have a finish line.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. In fact, like, let's extend that analogy. If you are running, right, you can pace yourself when you know how far you have to run. Whereas if you were just running perpetually and you never knew when you had to stop, you pretty much wouldn't know how fast to run either, would you?
Correct. It's like we were talking about on the Q&A with the junior lifters.
Yeah.
They set their sights on, you know, at the end of my junior years, might be 2 years,
yeah,
I'm going to be the best I could possibly be.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you know, you need to really be in this for a long, long time,
yeah,
to be the best you're going to be. And if you try and sprint to greatness, you're probably going to fall short.
Yeah. Anyway, though, to sort of bring us back a little bit to that attempt plan, it is deliberately vague, partly because on the day, you know, sometimes you just are bad. And so, you know, I might open at 225 on squat and normally I could cream 225. I might make it look shit. And then Alex might say, we're going to go to 232 or 235 and set me up for a 240 kilo third, which for me would be underperforming, but it's still not a terrible squat. So having that sort of flexibility in your planning is good, but it also reflects the fact that, like I said, this plan is subject to change, and it might be that my, you know, week three of this plan, I go to do my squats and I'm like, holy crap, like, you know, my back hurts or this feels really bad or unexpectedly hard. And then being able to be realistic with your expectations and say, okay, I'm going to have to pull things back and maybe play catch up later, or maybe just settle for what I actually have in this prep is useful too. But I think penciling in numbers as an endpoint is a useful exercise for planning. So that's why I've done it. And yeah, I can hand those numbers to Alex on the day and have quite a bit of confidence that he'll actually sort of pick the numbers that will let me do the best that I can without missing, hopefully. Yeah. Anything else from you?
No real other questions.
Well, I have a couple for you.
Let's hear it.
Yeah. Well, the first one is, if there were any decisions in this program that you think are bad or that you would do differently,
mm-hmm,
and differently not because of like a matter of flavor, but because you think I'm thinking down the wrong lines, what would they be and why?
I don't think anything is like egregiously bad.
Yeah, well, that's helpful. Yeah.
But I do think there are a few shifts that I would make, like just little tweaks in percentages.
Yeah,
I think your heavy day singles are set at good loads.
For is this during the peak?
During the last 3 weeks. Yeah. So the first 6 weeks I quite like.
Yeah.
Other than the where the deadlift and the heavy squat are placed in the week.
Yeah.
But that's kind of not very important.
Yeah.
But in the last 3 weeks,
yeah,
I like to see a little bit more discrepancy in loading between heavy and light days.
Yeah.
And that is probably coming from me being biased in my own training. And where I come from in my own training is that I get quite beat up from heavy loads, especially deadlifts.
Yeah.
And for me, lighter days being very, very light are more valuable than them being moderate, like for you.
Yeah.
And I know that for you, you like to actually train your light days a lot heavier than I do. So from my perspective, it's maybe a little bit too much, but for you, it's probably fine.
Yeah, so I think in response to that, there's two things. One is that for me, like, I consider for myself a light day not necessarily one in which loads are absolutely light, although I think there's certainly value in that, but particularly one where you have a lot of reps in reserve. So I think for, particularly with the squat, for grooving technique, past a point, I need to actually have a reasonable load on my shoulders. But there's, you know, there's no point in me saying I'm going to squat 215, which is light, inverted commas, as compared to 250, so I'm going to do it for triples, because suddenly that's actually hard. But if I can handle it for a single or two, I can make it look good. That's helpful. And just by having lots of reps in reserve, I'll feel great. But the second part of my response to that is that were I to do this peak and not have a huge degree of success at the end of it, probably, you know, the first part of my thoughts would be, you know, or the first thing in my mind would be, maybe my light days need to be easier, or maybe I could afford to drop those days and just go bench and deadlift on that day and consolidate the volume a little more. But yeah, I would start to think in terms of nip and tuck there. And if I was saying, you know what, I'm consistently coming in fatigued on my heavy days, I know it's not too much volume because I'm not actually doing that many reps across the week. So I've got to build in more recovery somewhere. Either the light days need to be lighter, or I need to, you know, consolidate them onto the heavier days so I have more days off squatting. So that's probably, that would probably be a really useful discussion to have after the competition. Is there anything else?
I think I like the way that you've spread out the volume on the squatting, so there's actually not a lot on any given day.
Yeah.
I would probably just keep it to 2 days, maybe three.
Yeah.
That's just my personal preference.
Yeah.
Based on what I was talking about before. I think the bench progression is quite good. I think the deadlift progression is quite good, but I would probably make the lighter day probably 5 to 10% lighter.
So like doubles at 215 in week one and 225 in week two and like 232 or 235 in week three.
Just extremely easy.
Yep.
And I'd probably do something similar to that for squats.
Yep.
So I'd have the heavier day first and then the lighter day on day three.
The day on day three is sort of like almost a moderate day on squat.
Yeah, but if I would have written this program, there would be 2 squat days.
Yeah. It'd
be day one and day three.
And you'd go like heavy day one, lightish day three. Heavy day one,
lightish day three. And yeah, it would kind of resemble the loading patterns for the deadlift in reverse.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of like it's been more symmetrical rather than more individualized on a lift basis, but it gives you heavier and lighter days with much more swinging between them.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I think we'll take a very quick break and I'm going to come back with a couple more questions and wrap it up.
Weekly Weights.
Okay, welcome back to Weekly Weights. Couple more quick questions and a wrap up. But first, I just want to give a shout out to a couple of haters who have asked me why we take breaks. And the reason we take breaks is because not everybody wants to listen to a podcast in one block, but also it gives us a chance to play some sick guitar and do some jams. And it's just part of our shtick because we're Weekly Weights and we take breaks. We are mates and we lift weights.
Should we take another break now?
Yeah, fuck them. Let's take another break now. We'll be right back.
Fuck the haters, fuck the haters, fuck the haters, fuck them good. Fuck the haters, fuck the haters, fuck the haters and fuck them real good. Weekly Weights.
Okay, welcome back to Weekly Weights. I hope you enjoyed that break.
I did. How'd you enjoy it?
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
You had a couple of questions for me, Will?
Yeah, so probably the most important one. Obviously, the whole point of this program is that it's transitioning me from not really training the squat and deadlift to actually taking me to true peaking and a competition. As a coach yourself, what considerations would you have if you had an athlete present to you with the same issue, what would differ between that and just training them, transitioning from hard training to competition?
I think the main consideration is how much load they're able to handle straight away.
Yeah.
So if someone is like you, kind of debilitated, but can still perform the movements with like relatively no pain.
Yeah.
You could probably start as you've done, which with very conservative top sets and very, very easy back off sets.
Yeah.
And then work a sort of normal stepwise progression into a peak, which is what you've done.
Yeah.
I think if someone was worse off, you would have to start them at a lower base and take slightly bigger jumps and maybe just not expect as much on the competition day.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably the most important thing is that someone coming back from an injury is likely to, depending on how much time they have, not perform to the best of their ability, like of their whole training career.
Yeah.
especially someone who is actually a good lifter, they may not get back to where they've been straight away, but this might just be the stepping stone meet to that best meet.
Actually, shout out Nick Olive, our mate, who just did his first meet back after. He's actually had a couple of issues. So he had surgery, I think, on a hernia.
He had like 5 hernias, I think, in his stomach.
That's hectic. So he's had hernia surgery and basically had to sort of wean himself back into lifting, and then tore his bicep playing gridiron. And so he's had this massive time off, and he came back and he actually won best male lifter at Top Lifter on the weekend. But I think I read his post this morning. He said he had his equal best total.
Equal best total.
So that's a really good effort when you consider it. So even though he hasn't hit any PBs, he was able to bridge that gap really successfully. So I think that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, so I agreed there. Congrats, Nick. I think to take on that, basically sort of give yourself a realistic expectation of what it is that you are capable of achieving.
Yeah.
If you set the mark too high and you push yourself too far in the training block, you're just going to hurt yourself again.
Yeah.
So if the injury was truly a bad injury, then set the bar a little bit lower. And if you do well, just progress a little bit faster than you had planned.
Yeah.
But make sure you start very conservative, especially with loading.
Yeah. I agree, and I also think, and again, when you run your eye over this program, hopefully you'll see that. I think that when you are actually preparing for a competition, as opposed to trying to sort of like do off-season training and build your strength or build your capacity, when you're preparing for a competition, it's more important to sort of touch weights and familiarize yourself with them gradually than it is to necessarily beat yourself into the ground with them. And so that's one reason why you can afford to have top sets that are not very hard to sort of just get you used to touching, you know, whatever weight you need to be touching at that time, and then do your back offs with weights that aren't going to aggravate you, that you can handle well, that you can drill technique with. And particularly for people who are coming back from an injury or a niggle, it's not uncommon for you to sort of like subconsciously alter your technique a little bit because you're just used to somewhere being a little bit tender or it's a little bit tight and stuff. And that's the type of thing that you might get away with early in the cycle, and then late it can really start to build up into a problem. So jumping in full bore, even if you feel kind of healthy, I don't think it's productive, but I also don't think it's necessary, because all you need to do is just touch the right weights and then get your work in. And you can still get plenty of volume in and still, you know, build some muscle and build some strength up with some variations and with some accessory movements too. And just give yourself the time to build back into training, build some momentum, and then go into the meet healthy, hopefully.
Yeah, one thing that Nick wrote in his post, shout out Nick again.
Yeah, it's at Nick Olive or Nicholas Olive?
Nicholas Olive, I think.
At Nicholas Olive, one word on Instagram.
His coach, Joey Zingini, shout out Joey, had made a point to him to say, don't search for all-time PBs, search for post-injury PBs.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good way of putting it.
Yeah.
One more thing on that. If the injury hurts to do the main lift and it causes you a little bit of discomfort doing it, you may be able to use your secondary day as a variation, which doesn't provide you with the same pain.
Yeah.
So let's say you have a hip injury and it hurts a little bit at the bottom of the squat.
Yeah.
You might use like a pin squat or a box squat.
Yeah.
Or something on the secondary day, just to alleviate the pain a little bit.
Yeah.
And keep you progressing.
Yeah. And I think it's sort of on a similar note, there's a concept called the acute to chronic workload ratio, and it can be predictive of injury risk. If you step up from doing no work to doing quite a lot very quickly, that's putting you at more risk of injury or re-aggravation of your injury than if you gradually build into it. So doing things like building the number of sets that you do like on your main lift over a couple of weeks, or, you know, or adding some reps here and there, or starting quite light and having a variation on one day before introducing 2 days of the movement that used to aggravate you, once you're actually sort of under control, is all probably smart too. The final question I wanted to ask you, Alex, was to do with determining competition targets, which we spoke about.
Uh-huh.
So when you have had people who've had a reasonably long time off, you know, or like whether it's doing off-season training or because of injury, what do you think is a sensible way to go about determining what they should hit at competition, presuming you do want to have those targets from a reasonable way out?
It's very hard to say, and it depends on the individual.
Yeah.
You can look at stuff like how they're handling their volume work versus how they had handled their volume work when they were at their strongest as an indicator.
Yeah.
But I think setting like a range is probably the best way to do it.
Yeah.
And to not communicate the end range, like the high end range, to the lifter. So let's say you have someone whose best squat is 205 and they're coming back from a back injury. You might say, okay, in this comp, you might think in your head, in this comp, they're going to hit somewhere between 190 and 200.
Yeah.
You might say to them, you know, around 190 is the goal.
Yeah.
So you're underselling it a little bit, and then if they do better, great.
And what's the benefit of underselling it?
The benefit of underselling it, I guess, is the opposite of the detriment to overselling it.
Right, so if you have to cut them back, they feel bad, whereas if you give them more, they feel like it's a reward and they're doing well. Is that...
I think if you oversell it and you give them the high-end goal, like let's say you say, yeah, you're going to hit an equal PB.
Yeah.
And they don't, then they're going to feel bad about it. But if you give them the goal of, you know, 5 kilos under or 10 kilos under, and they're able to maybe get 2.5 more or 5 more, then that's great.
What about in the instance of a healthy athlete? So say, like, you know, say I hadn't had this injury, but I'd spent a few months overseas and then like 6 months, 8 months of just training YOLO, leaning in. What would be your indicators?
The similar indicators, like how they're like moving, how they're moving rep work compared to how they previously moved rep work.
Yeah.
But again, like I don't oversell what their third attempts are going to be.
Yeah.
Because I don't know until the day.
Yeah.
So give them like maybe a range. Like for you, Will, it'd be somewhere between 240 and 250.
Yeah,
and that's that's not a surprise to you, because it will probably be, your third attempt will definitely be between 240 and 255.
Yeah. In fact, I think 255 would be a big stretch.
Yeah.
And 240 would be I'm having a bad day. Yeah. So, you know.
Yeah. So I think giving them a range is a good idea, but don't set it too high. And also with someone who's new, maybe don't even give them an idea. Just have it in your head and in your planning.
And how narrow does that range have to be for your purposes when you're planning for, say, a pretty good lifter?
I don't think it really matters, because I think if things go really well during the peaking process, you can just alter things anyway.
Yeah.
And if it goes great on the day, you can just change the plan.
Yeah.
So none of it's set in stone. So I don't think it really matters too much.
Yeah.
But if you have a vague idea, it can make the programming a little bit easier.
Yeah. So I think, and I wonder if you agree with this, I think something that's nice when you have people who are just making that smooth transition from like training hard-ish off-season training into a meet prep, if you don't have an end target to work backwards from, which is my preferred method, if you don't have that, it's still not that hard to sort of just smoothly taper people down. Like if they're hitting fives and they're sort of moderately hard or whatever, then you can sort of project about where you want their threes to end up, and you just practice from that. And then suddenly from triples, it's easier to do doubles and pick a top single. And I just sort of work on the concept of conservation of momentum. It's like I want basically the weights they're hitting towards the end of their peak to be heavier and look just as good or better than the weights they're hitting for their rep work at that time too.
Definitely.
And you know, from there, I guess that allows you to sort of say, well, here's about where our end goal should be. But then, like you said, it's a range, because it might be that you say, yeah, your end goal squat's about 240, but if their triples are suddenly just looking great, you can bump that up, and so on and so on. Yeah. All right, I think that brings us to the end of today. We've covered a lot of valuable stuff. Alex, is there anything further you want to say?
No, but I'm going to look up a review and we're going to read one out.
Okay, while Alex looks up a review, there is something further I want to say. We're going to do a follow-up to this episode after my competition, and we're going to do it for two reasons. One is because it'll be useful for me to say what went well and badly, and for Alex to put in his two cents as an objective outsider. And two, because my next competition will be at the Strength Fortress Team Challenge in Melbourne, hosted by our friend JP. And I'm going to let Alex do my preparation for that, so we'll be able to sit down here and say, what are we going to do now? What's similar? What's different? You know, what do we think has to change, and what will the targets be? And so we'll be able to do a follow-up case study. The top one?
Yeah,
top one. This is actually a friendly one.
What a surprise.
Yeah, what a surprise. Normally they're sarcastic, whereas this one from ATLK95 is actually a nice review. So 5 stars.
title is 9 from 9. That's funny. That's a powerlifting reference. Obviously, it's 5 from 5 on the stars scale, though. Happened to stumble across this from a few degrees of separation in Oz Powerlifting, and Def's one of the more practical and helpful powerlifting podcast I've come across. Grammatical error there, but that's fine. Will Defs be tuning in to see what else these blokes have to say? Thank you, ATLK95. Do we know who that was?
No.
Okay, well, thank you very much. We'll talk to you next week. Alex, say bye.
Bye.